Hello, everyone. I'm sorry for the delay there. We had a bit of an issue here on our end. We hope you're all here. We have a great, exciting, very informative topic for you today. We are doing the employment standards update. If you don't see the slides yet, you will momentarily once we work out the glitch. Just so you know, today we're going through a lot of the legislative changes that have happened in late 2018 and things that are happening this year as well. We're going to run through them as quickly and as thoroughly as possible. Please be reminded that these slides are going to be available for you to review at any time, and I strongly suggest that if you are operating in one of the jurisdictions that have some changes here, that you go back and revisit what is there. So just before we begin, just a quick update. If you have any questions during the presentation, we likely will not be able to get to them, but I want you to please submit them as they arise. They will be addressed after the presentation as soon as possible. If you missed any of our past webinars, they are available over on e2rsolutions.com, and you can find the actual written materials in your member portal. And lastly, the stuff that we are talking about today is a general overview only. It's not a specific analysis of the law, so please keep that in mind. For any particular questions, please seek out our direct advice. Next month's e-learning is March 27th. We will be starting on time, and we'll be discussing progressive discipline. So without further ado, let's get started. There's a quick agenda there that outlines the various jurisdictions that have enacted or will be enacting certain amendments. Just note that, as you are aware, each province and the federal jurisdiction has its own set of minimum standards. Some are the same, some are vastly different, and we need to be aware of what those are for the province in which the employee is primarily working in. So it's not necessarily going to matter where your home office is or that type of thing. It's typically going to be based upon where the individual is working from.
Okay, so why don't we dive into things and start with the changes that are upcoming to federally regulated employers underneath the Canada Labor Code. So Bill C-86 was passed December 31st of last year and introduces new pay equity legislation and updates to the Canada Labor Code. Although the legislation has passed, none of the changes have yet to be scheduled to come into force, but will likely be rolled out during 2019. We've heard estimates of June or September 2019, but again, nothing yet to be confirmed. So the biggest first change associated with these revisions is employee misclassification. So employers are now prohibited underneath the Canada Labor Code from misclassifying employees as independent contractors. And therefore, employees would be able to file a complaint with the CIRB if they feel like they've been misclassified. Additionally, there's now equal pay for equal work provision, which specifically relates to treating casual, part-time, temporary, and seasonal employees the same as full-time employees when performing substantially the same kind of work, requiring substantially the same kind of skill, effort, and responsibility. There are some exceptions, which we have noted on the slide before, but we do expect them to be closely scrutinized. So please be very careful when trying to make any exceptions. And then just keep in note that temporary help agencies would also be entitled to the same rate of pay as regular full-time employees in the circumstances outlined above. So keep in mind that this only applies to casual, part-time, and temporary seasonal employees versus full-time, not full-time versus full-time. So really we're talking about your casual employees versus your full-timers here.
I've just been informed also that you may not be able to view the slides right now. We are working on that issue. Once they do come up, I'll make sure to let you know. In the interim, I will try to kind of visually describe what are on the slides. And again, this is really going to be one where you're going to want to revisit the slides for the particular jurisdictions where your employees work out of, because these changes are very important. So still on the issue of the Canada Labor Code at the federal level, there have been some changes to leave of absences provisions. The first is that there has been the elimination of the length of service requirements for most leaves of absences under the Canada Labor Code, as well as general holiday pay. I've just been informed that the slides are up, so that's great news. So again, the length of service requirements have typically been eliminated under the Canada Labor Code if to determine whether you are eligible for a job protected leave or general holiday pay. There's also some new leaves of absences as well under the Canada Labor Code. There is a personal leave now of up to 5 days for illness, injury, or health-related family responsibilities, education responsibilities for family members under 18, urgent matters, citizenship ceremonies, and other prescribed reasons. The first 3 days of those five are going to be paid. There is a service time requirement for that leave in order to get the paid leave, and it's 3 months of service. Medical leave, there are the current sick leave provisions. They've been renamed to medical leave, and there have been an addition of the organ donation and medical appointments during working hours. That's been added to the new medical leave. There's also an unspecified leave for acting as a witness or a juror or to participate in jury selection. There's a new family violence leave of up to 5 days with pay for victims of family violence. Again, that one does have a service time requirement for the paid time. That's 3 months, but you are entitled to the unpaid time if you don't have that service requirement. And then there's an amended reservist leave, and you can see that there on the slide. There's also some changes to vacation, some minor changes. Employees with 5 years or more of service with the same employer are now entitled to 3 weeks of unpaid vacation time and 6% vacation pay. The previous threshold was 6 years, so that's being dropped by a year. And there's a new vacation threshold. Employees with 10 years or more of service with the same employer are now entitled to 4 weeks vacation and 8% vacation pay. That's a new entitlement. So there's three levels. There's the 2 week, the kind of basic, up to 5 years, and there's 3 weeks between 5 and 10 years, and then it goes to 4 weeks for 10 or more.
There's also been changes to the hours of work and scheduling provisions underneath the Canada Labor Code. A lot that relates to breaks typically just brings the Canada Labor Code up to the rest of the provinces, for example, by requiring a 30-minute unpaid break for every 5 consecutive hours of work and a rest period of at least 8 hours between shifts. Employers, though, are also required to ensure that they're providing unpaid breaks that are necessary for medical reasons or to an employee who is nursing in order to nurse or express breast milk. And then in line with some of the former changes underneath Bill 148 in Ontario, the federal government's now requiring written notice of employees' work schedules at least 96 hours in advance. Otherwise, employees can refuse work. Employers can provide less than 96 hours of notice in very limited situations, as outlined on the slide. There's also been substantial revisions to the termination provisions underneath the Canada Labor Code. Currently, as federally regulated employers are aware, it's 2 weeks after 3 months, and that's it. So obviously, as you can see from the slide, there is now a substantial increase to the minimum entitlement. But keeping in mind that this bill does not eliminate the unjust dismissal provisions underneath Section 240 of the code, therefore, employees with more than 12 consecutive months of service, excluding managers, may not be terminated unjustly, or you may face a claim. So just keep that in mind, even though they've updated the requirements there.
And just note as well quickly that those changes have not been made effective yet. They will become effective. That is pretty much a certainty, but we don't have an effective date for any of these kind of changes under the Canada Labor Code. When we do know exactly when that date is, we will let you know, but this is what it's all going to look like. There also will be some changes as it relates to unjust dismissal complaints. As you know, non-supervisory level employees with a certain service requirement are entitled to bring an unjust dismissal complaint challenging the reason for their termination. And unless we can prove that the termination is for just cause or there is a significant business reason that's provable as it relates to why their job and other people's jobs perhaps have been eliminated, there is the potential that an employee could seek reinstatement from the Industrial Labor Relations Board. Now, the inspectors will be permitted, though, to deem a complaint withdrawn if an unsettled complaint was not referred to the CIRB for adjudication by the complainant following notification. There's also going to be the power to suspend a complaint where it is satisfied that the complainant must take additional measures or reject the complaint in its entirety if the complainant is not within the jurisdiction. So, for example, they are an Ontario provincially governed employee. They have no grounds to bring a complaint. Also, some unionized workplaces as well won't have that ability. If the complaint is frivolous, vexatious, or made in bad faith, or the complaint, and this is the most important one, has been settled in writing between the employer and the complainant. So, for example, say you are under the Canada Labor Code and you terminate someone and you offer them some additional entitlements for a signed release, and that employee does, in fact, sign that release, releasing claims, well, that should provide you with enough protection if the employee changes their mind and then does file that unjust dismissal complaint within the required time period. And there's a couple other points there that will be coming to effect as well. Now, the last bit of changes at the federal level, they've increased the minimum age for work from 17 to 18 years, except in certain circumstances. They're also requiring pay equity in the federal, public, and private sector for employers that have 10 or more employees, you know, need to maintain a pay equity plan to identify and correct any differences in compensation between predominantly female and predominantly male job classes for which the work performance is of equal value. There will be some posting requirements in terms of information that must be given to employees. One is upon hire within 30 days, and also you must have to post certain materials in your workplace. Again, once we know more about all that, we will be notifying you. And then there's a couple more points here. The most important probably is the temporary help agency revisions, which says that an agency won't be prohibited from their employees working as your employees at some point, whereas there isn't currently under the federal jurisdiction, there is in some other provinces, but that's the most important point.
Okay, so let's move on to the changes underneath the BC Employment Standards Act. So again, this would apply to employees who are located in BC. So Bill 6 amended the Employment Standards Act. These changes came into effect on May 17th of last year. Essentially, the bill amended existing leaves as well as introduced two new leaves, but it's important for BC employers to note that further changes are possible in the future, as on June 21st, 2018, the Employment Standards Act Reform Project Committee released a 400-page report that made 78 additional recommended changes to the Act. So we will certainly be monitoring this and keeping you posted there. Just by way of note, although it wasn't addressed in the bill, we just want to make sure that all employers are advised that Family Day in BC was moved to the third Monday in February, whereas in prior years it was on the second Monday in February, effective as of this year. So at least all the provinces are now in line as it relates to Family Day. So the leaves of absence that were amended underneath the Act primarily relate to pregnancy and parental leave. So pregnancy leave, employees are now permitted to start the leave 13 weeks ahead of the expected due date, which was amended from 11. And then the parental leave entitlements were amended to match the EI amendments that came into effect at the federal level in 2017. So now birth mothers may take up to 61 consecutive weeks of leave immediately after their pregnancy leave for a total possible leave of 78 weeks. And then non-birth parents may take up to 62 weeks of leave. Further amendments occurred to the compassionate care leave, which was increased up to 27 weeks from 8 weeks for employees who require a leave to care for and support a family member with a significant risk of death within a 26-week period. And then a new leave is child death leave. An employee who experiences the death of a child under any circumstances will be provided with an unpaid job protected leave of up to 104 weeks. And then they also created crime-related child disappearance leave. So where an employee whose child's gone missing as a result of a crime, they're now entitled to an unpaid job protected leave of up to 52 weeks, which essentially matches all provinces. And just so you know, a child in BC is defined as a person of less than 19 years of age.
And in addition to the changes to BC's Employment Standards Act, there have been some changes to BC's human rights legislation and the processes thereunder. So most of these changes became effective November 27th, 2018. And the largest change is probably the extension for the limitation period in order to bring a human rights complaint in BC. It has been increased from 6 months up to 12 months. And just be reminded, in BC as well, an employee is allowed to bring both a human rights complaint and a wrongful dismissal complaint in front of the courts, unlike in Ontario. So, but in this case, they have now up to 12 months in order to bring it in front of the Human Rights Tribunal. They've also kind of reestablished the Human Rights on the Human Rights Commission and the creation of a commissioner. So they have not had one of those or that body since 2002, but they are reestablishing that. And what that means essentially is the independent commissioner is going to report directly to BC legislature, who is, and they're responsible for proactively promoting and advocating for human rights. And so they are able to intervene in actual complaints and make kind of submissions on behalf of the commission on obviously those like special merit kind of cases where there are significant interests in play. They'll also have a broad authority to examine and make recommendations regarding various human rights issues, including pay inequities, social barriers to employment, and workplace diversity. So just more and more government outreach into these areas now in BC that weren't there previously.
Okay, and while we typically do not delve into tax, when speaking with our clients, we do think that you should be advised that BC has now instituted an employer health tax, which is similar to the payroll taxes in Manitoba, Ontario, Quebec, and Newfoundland. The program has been implemented starting January 1 of this year. And essentially, it imposes a payroll tax on employers with an annual BC payroll in excess of $500,000. And so obviously when you're looking at payroll, there are certain things that the tax wants you to take a look at to determine if you meet that threshold. So please do speak with your accountant if you are unsure if you meet that threshold. And just some important dates to keep in mind that employers with payrolls of over worth over $600,000 and charitable nonprofit organizations with payrolls of over $1 million are required to make quarterly installments starting in 2019, and the first payment is due on June 15, 2019. So if this is something that may apply to you, it's very important that you start working with your payroll departments and your accountants to make sure that you A, get registered, and B, meet that June 15th deadline. For any other employers, the first payment, just so you know, will be due on March 31st of 2020.
Let's move east from BC to Alberta. So there were not any significant changes to the Employment Standards Code in Alberta, thankfully, in 2018, and nothing really planned as of yet for 2019. But there were some changes to occupational health and safety legislation. It was called an Act to Protect the Health and Well-Being of Working Albertans. That became law as of June 1st, 2018. That law amended both the Occupational Health and Safety Act as well as the Workplace Compensation Act. So for a summary of the Workplace Compensation Act changes, please see our alert from January 4th, 2018. If you don't have access to that, just let us know and we will send that your way. There is one kind of change to note from an employment standards purpose, and that is the minimum wage went up as of October 1st, 2018, $10 to $15 per hour in Alberta. And there's some minor changes that are not covered in this presentation. Again, revisit our presentation or our alert from Jan 4th of last year. The major change is there have been three basic rights enshrined under occupational health and safety legislation. The first is the right to know, the second is the right to participate, and the third is the right to refuse. What does all that mean? Well, right to know means all employers must inform workers about potential hazards and have access to basic health and safety information on site. The second is the right to participate, which is all employees must be granted the right to participate in matters related to health and safety. So essentially, employers with 20 or more employees must form a joint worksite health and safety committee. And then employers with between 5 and 19 employees must appoint a health and safety representative. So just getting the workers more involved in their health and safety. And then lastly is the right to refuse, which employees have the right now in Alberta specifically to refuse dangerous work, and employers are permitted from making reprisals against an employee who exercises this right. Now, just a quick note on the right to refuse. Other workers may be assigned to do the work if they are advised of the refusal, the reason for it, and are made aware of their own right to refuse the work after you determine that there isn't a risk. And just a point on the committees and representatives, they will conduct workplace inspections, identify hazards, assist in the development of health and safety policies, procedures, and training programs, and ultimately make recommendations to the employer and facilitate discussions regarding health and safety concerns. There's also been additional amendments to bring Alberta in line with many of the other provinces as it relates to violence and harassment in the workplace. Employers are now responsible for ensuring that their workers are not subjected to workplace violence and harassment. That means that they must develop a violence and harassment program and a corresponding policy in consultation with either the Joint Occupational Health and Safety Committee, if one exists, or the representative or the affected employees. You must also provide training to all employees on workplace violence and harassment. And there are also additional responsibilities for employers and supervisors to prevent workplace harassment and make sure that employees refrain from these activities. So you have to play referee, essentially. And you must also investigate any incident of harassment or violence and take action to address the incident and prevent it from happening again, and prepare an investigation report outlining the circumstances of the incident and the corrective action. If you do not do these things, you will be found to be in breach of these obligations. If you have any questions about these, please don't hesitate to reach out to us because they are important. There's also a health and safety program which is applicable for employers with 20 or more employees. You're required to develop a written health and safety program to be reviewed every 3 years. There's also the express obligation now to report any workplace injury which requires the admission to a hospital, as well as any near misses which could have caused a potential serious injury.
Okay, continuing to move east, we have the slowest province to enact changes, which is Saskatchewan. Currently, there's a bill before the legislature, which is, while likely to pass, again, it's not yet law, and it amends leaves of absences basically to match the EI changes again in 2017 as it relates to parental leave, critically ill, child care leave, critically ill adult leave, as well as implementing a domestic violence policy, again, very similar to the other provinces. So just very quickly, the biggest changes are obviously that parental leave has been increased up to 59 weeks. So when you add that to the new 19-week leave, which is increased from 18, employees are entitled to up to a maximum of 78 weeks of leave. All other parents may take an unpaid parental leave now of 63 weeks. And then critically ill child care leave, it's obviously been extended to include additional family members who may be entitled to the leave. Critically ill adult leave is now a new 17-week unpaid job protective leave to support provide care and support for a critically ill family member. And last but not least, interpersonal violence leaves It's a 10-day unpaid leave of absence to deal with issues relating to interpersonal violence. What's interesting is Saskatchewan has not elected to provide any paid days for this leave, unlike any province. Again, this is the one province where these changes have not yet passed. It's before the legislature, and we'll be sure to keep you updated.
If I didn't know any better, I would assume that Erin may be from BC, because she started with the most important province to her and then moving east from there. So we're at Manitoba now. Next stop, I'm going to guess, is going to be Ontario, but we're in Manitoba, and there have been changes in Manitoba as of June 4th of last year. We've highlighted some of them here. One is the minimum wage went up as of October 1st, 2018 to $11.35 per hour, and that's going to increase as of October this year to $11.65 per hour. So that's the minimum wage rate in Manitoba. Other key amendments include averaging hours and work permit, which is an employer and an employee or a group of employees may enter into an agreement specifying different standard hours of work without requiring overtime. Some of the rules kind of related to that agreement are you may not exceed 12 hours per day or 60 hours per week and must average back to the equivalent of 40 hours or less over a 12-week period. For a group of employees, the employer must obtain the signed support of 75% of the affected employees. If it's a one-on-one agreement, obviously it requires 100% of the employee's agreement. And it does not require approval from the Director of Employment Standards. The parental leave has also been extended to match that under EI, so it's been extended to 63 weeks. There is a new leave, the critically ill adult leave, where employees are entitled to a new 17 week of unpaid job protected leave to provide for care and support of a critically ill adult family member. Lastly, the employment of young people has been modified. The minimum age of employment has been raised from 12 to 13. This does eliminate the requirement of a permit before employing someone under the age of 16. Instead, an employer must ensure that the young person has a work readiness certificate from a course approved by the Director of Employment Standards. So be reminded that if the employee is under 16, they must have that certificate in order to work. There is the ability now to make a complaint to the director, and they may refuse that complaint if it's frivolous or vexatious. And the also changes have clarified that unionized employees do not have the ability to file a complaint with the Director of Employment Standards. They must go through their actual grievance processes. And lastly, temporary help agencies in Manitoba are now able to operate without a license.
In a nice logical fashion, moving further east, we have now reached Ontario, which has been a roller coaster ride for employers, and certainly, unfortunately, further changes are still possible underneath this new Conservative government. So Bill 47 repealed most, but not all, of the amendments made to the Employment Standards Act and Labor Relations Act made by the former Liberal government underneath Bill 148. The amendments to the Employment Standards Act did come into force on January 1st of this year. The amendments to the Labor Relations Act came into force on November 21st of last year. One key thing to note there with regards to the labor relations changes, please see our alert from October 23rd, 2018, as we're only covering employment standard changes in this presentation. In addition to Bill 47, the government actually enacted another bill that's still being passed through the legislature, Bill 66. It is expected to pass, but again, it's not yet passed yet. As soon as we receive notification that it's passed, we will advise you. And then one other further note, the Pay Transparency Act, which we advised you of last year, which requires employers to include a stated salary range on all job postings and bar employers from inquiring about past income levels, has been delayed to an indefinite future date to be determined by the government. We don't have any further information as to what this is actually looking like, if they're going to be doing it this year or not, but again, we will be sure to keep you posted on that. So what has changed? What are the repealed provisions? First and foremost, minimum wage will remain at $14 an hour until October 2020. at which time annual inflation adjustments will restart. Personal emergency leave. Employees in Ontario are no longer entitled to personal emergency leave days. This leave is gone in its entirety, and it's been replaced instead by three different leaves, none of which are paid. I cannot stress this enough. There is no more personal emergency leave days, period, end stop. So the new leaves instead that replace personal emergency leave, we have first and foremost sick leave, where employees are entitled to three unpaid days for personal illness, injury, or medical emergency. Secondly, we have family responsibility leave, where employees are entitled to three unpaid days for the illness, injury, medical emergency, or any urgent matter that concerns specified family members. And then last but not least, bereavement leave, where employees are entitled to two unpaid days because of the death of specified family members. Employees are entitled to these leaves after 2 weeks of employment. And good news for most employers can now require documentation reasonable in the circumstance for employees to take that leave, including a doctor's note. Further provisions that have been repealed are the equal pay for equal work, which again relates to employment status. That has been repealed, but keep in mind that the equal pay requirements based on sex remain as part of the legislation. Further provisions that have been repealed are all of the scheduling provisions, which relate to an employee's right to refuse scheduling changes without sufficient notice, on-call pay, and cancellation pay. Again, very good news for employers. It also revised the three-hour rule. So now, if an employee is regularly scheduled to work more than 3 hours and attends at work and works less than 3 hours, the employee is entitled to the greater of the amount earned for time work plus the employee's regular rate for the remainder of 3 hours and the employee's regular rate for 3 hours of work. In terms of misclassification, there's been a tweak, not necessarily a repeal. So while misclassifying an employee as an independent contractor remains a violation of the ESA, now the complainant must establish that he or she is an employee, whereas previously the onus was on the employer to demonstrate that the employee was in fact an independent contractor. And then they reduced the penalties for violations of the ESA back to the former maximum penalties of $250, $500, and $1,000 respectively.
Let's talk about what's remaining now. So the changes to vacation do remain. So that means employees with 5 or more years of service are entitled to 3 weeks of unpaid vacation time and 6% of their wages as vacation pay. There's the leaves of absences, so the creation of domestic and sexual violence leave, death of a child leave, and critical illness leave remain. The extension of the family medical leave from 27 weeks to 52 week period remain. The extension of the parental leave in line with the EI changes remain. The extension of the pregnancy leave in the event of a stillbirth or miscarriage to 12 weeks of unpaid leave also remain. Now, as relates to overtime, employees who hold more than one position with an employer are working overtime must be paid at the rate for the position they're working during the overtime period. You cannot choose to pay them overtime at their lower job working rate. As relates to interns, the only exemption for someone is an individual who is working part of an experiential learning program run by a university, community college, or private career college or high school. So essentially, only official co-op students are interns for purposes of the Employment Standards Act. Everyone else is an employee and must be treated as such. There is no requirement for an employee to notify their employer that they are making an ESA complaint. They're not obligated to let you know that they are going to proceed with that. They can just simply do that, and then you'll be notified, likely by the ministry, that a complaint has been registered. And the record keeping requirements are also in there as well. Those haven't changed. Now, what's going to change potentially on the horizon? The ESA poster, perhaps we'll be doing away with the requirement to post the Ministry of Labor poster in our workplaces. There may be also the ability to get away from excess hours agreements in terms of having to seek the approval of the directors. You may be able to enter into those proper excess hour agreements directly with the employee without approval. And the same thing with the overtime averaging agreements. You may not have to seek any approval from the director, so long as the averaging period is no longer than 4 weeks.
So Quebec employers experienced a lot of changes last year to the Act respecting labor standards. The amendments are currently in force. They all are, except for those that we'll review that cover personnel placement and recruitment agencies. There were 7 key areas amended, which we'll now review in detail as quickly as possible. So starting with hours of work. So employers and employees may agree to the staggering of hours of work on a basis other than a weekly basis if the weekly average comes to 40 hours without the authorization of the CNESST, subject to the following requirements. First, that the agreement's in writing. Second, that the hours are staggered over a maximum period of 4 weeks. Third, that the work week may not exceed 50 hours. And lastly, the employer and the employee may terminate the agreement upon giving 2 weeks of notice. So essentially the idea here is to allow more flexibility with scheduling. So hopefully this is a good change. Refusal to work additional hours. Employees are now allowed to refuse to work if they have not been informed at least 5 days in advance of the requirement to work. So we must be scheduling employees 5 days in advance at a minimum. The exception is unless the nature of their duties requires them to remain available or their services are required, but we presume that this exemption is going to be viewed very narrowly. And then lastly, the maximum daily required overtime is that employees can refuse to work more than 2 hours after their regular working schedule, which has been reduced down from 4.
And they also have enacted some partially paid leaves. So the first one is the family leave, and that means that every year an employee is eligible to be absent for up to 10 days to fulfill obligations related to the care, health, or education of their child or the child of their spouse, and the first 2 of those 10 days shall be paid, provided that the employee has at least 3 months of uninterrupted service. They are still entitled to the unpaid time if they don't meet that 3-month threshold, but they are only entitled to be paid once they have that 3-month service in there. And employees are also entitled to 2 days paid if the employee has been absent due to sickness, which is the second leave. That's the sickness leave. They're not entitled. So like there's the family leave and then there's the sickness leave. You're only entitled to 2 days of pay under the combined leave. So you can only kind of use one of those, and only the first 2 days of each leave is paid. Once those 2 days have been paid, all the rest of the time is unpaid. Second one is sickness, organ tissue donation, accident, domestic or sexual violence leave. Again, the first 2 days of that 26-week period are paid, provided they haven't used those paid days under the family leave, and there's that 3-month requirement as well. Keep that in mind. Further, these leaves. The leave for birth or adoption, it removes the requirement of service, which used to be 60 days in order to be eligible for 5 days of leave, 2 of which are paid. So again, 5 days of leave, 2 days to be paid, no service requirement anymore. And then the other leave is the absence owing to someone's death. It increases the entitlement for paid leave in the event of a death of certain family members from 1 day with pay to 2 days with pay and 3 days unpaid for a total of 5 days. That's available to all employees.
Some changes and amendments to the unpaid leave of absence is provided. First one being caregiver leave, which has been increased to 16 weeks from 12 weeks, where an employee required a leave of absence because their presence is necessary due to a serious illness of a specified family member, keeping in mind that this is increased to 36 weeks where the relative is a minor child. There's a new serious illness leave, which is an unpaid leave of absence of up to 27 weeks in the event of a potentially deadly illness for a relative or a person to whom the employee acts as caregiver, and that's extended to 104 weeks in the event that the relative is a minor child. There's a new death of a child leave, which is an unpaid leave of absence up to 104 weeks in the event of the death of a minor child. And then in the event of a disappearance of a child, this leave has been amended, increased from 52 weeks to 104 weeks following the disappearance of a minor child. Some further leaves of absences which have been amended is the suicide leave of absence. So employees are entitled to an unpaid leave of absence now of up to 104 weeks, increased from 52 in the event of the death of a spouse, father, mother, child as a result of suicide. And then just a note that an employer may request an employee who is absent for reasons relating to care, health, or education of family members to require the employees to provide a document attesting to the reason for the absence where the circumstance warrants it.
There are also changes to the vacation and statutory holiday rules in Quebec. Unlike the old system where after 5 years of service, an employee was entitled to 3 weeks of unpaid vacation and 6% vacation pay, that has been reduced to 3 years of service. So anyone with three or more years is entitled to that greater benefit. This might be good news for our Quebec clients. For seasonal employees, you can pay vacation pay on each paycheck. There was a general kind of prohibition against doing that for all employees. Now, certain employees that are deemed to be seasonal have been carved out, so you can do that on each paycheck. This only applies to seasonal employees, though, or those that work intermittently for an employer. There's some changes for statutory holiday as well, where statutory holiday falls on a day that is not part of the employee's regular work schedule. The employee is now entitled to the statutory holiday indemnity or a compensatory holiday on an agreed upon date. It is the employer's choice to choose between a payment or a compensatory holiday. Now, while it's not going ahead in Ontario, it is going ahead in Quebec. And what we're talking about is kind of this idea of differential treatment or differential pay rates for different types of employees. So in Quebec now, an employer is not permitted to remunerate an employee at a lower wage rate because of the employee's working status. So if the employee came from a temp help agency, or because the employee is a part-time employee, that is not justification in and of itself to pay that person less. So essentially, employers are prohibited from exercising any difference in treatment with respect to pay, but also with respect to benefit plans or retirement plans based solely on the hire date for employees doing the same task. Sorry, small point of clarification. You can't treat someone differently in terms of wage rate based upon their status. You can't treat anyone differently as it relates to retirement plans or benefit plans based solely upon their service time. So those are the two rules. Now note that this does not apply retroactively to employees that are hired before June 12, 2018.
So the definition of psychological harassment underneath the Act Respecting Labor Standards has now been defined to expressly include sexual harassment, and employers are required now to adopt a policy for the prevention of psychological harassment and include in that policy a specific procedure for handling complaints. Employers must name a person specifically to handle said complaints. And employees now have 2 years since the last occurrence of the psychological harassment to file a complaint with the CNESST. And subject to the employee's consent, the CNESST may now advise the Human Rights Commission of any harassment claim to filed, which includes a discrimination component. So even if the employee doesn't do it themselves, the CNESST might. And then very quickly about the personal placement agencies, again, these are the parts of the provisions that have not yet been enacted. Agencies now must hold a license from the CNESST, and you can incur fines if you use an agency that does not have a license. Furthermore, keep in mind that you want to be working with licensed agencies because you are now jointly liable for compensation and other obligations underneath the Act. Finally, if you're an employer who hires temporary foreign workers, there are new requirements and restrictions on employers and what you can and cannot do with temporary foreign workers. They're on the slide there, so just be aware of that. Lastly, and very quickly, there were just a couple of other brief amendments to the Act, specifically first about directors' liability, where now directors and officers are presumed to have committed the offense themselves, subject to the due diligence offense. Employees who receive tips now must have the tips included in the calculation for an indemnity in the case of collective dismissal and the compensation for those 2 paid days off that Alex reviewed. And then in terms of payments of wages, you no longer need a written agreement to do a direct deposit. So that makes things a lot simpler for employers.
In New Brunswick, there is a combination of amendments that are law and also some things that are not law. So right now, what is law is that there have been amendments to leaves of absences to match the EI extension period that we've outlined in all the other provinces. They've also initiated a domestic violence leave. What hasn't happened yet, but it has passed its first reading, is this Bill 5, an act to amend the Employment Standards Act. If it's passed, it would increase the minimum wage from to $12 per hour, and the minimum overtime rate to $18 per hour. And also New Brunswick has introduced the Family Day holiday as of this year. Those leaves of absences are outlined on slide 40. Those again match the EI periods of time, as well as with the introduction of the domestic violence leave that came into effect on September 1st, 2018.
New Brunswick also introduced changes to their occupational health and safety legislation. The changes were previously scheduled to come into force on September 1st of last year, but now will come into force this coming April 1st, so make note of that date, April 1st. And specifically, the changes relate to enacting harassment and violence prevention in the workplace. So employers now must develop and implement a written code and practice for the prevention of harassment in the workplace. Specifically, as it relates to violence, all employers must conduct a violence risk assessment, and employers with 20 or more employees shall establish that code of practice for violence. Employers with less than 20 employees may only be required to do so if they operate in certain industries or if the violence risk assessment identifies a risk of violence. But of course, we would tell you that it's best practice anyways to put it in place, even if you don't meet that threshold. And then lastly, employers in New Brunswick now must provide training with respect to violence and harassment. So very important to make note of that.
Nova Scotia has also made some changes. Again, these amendments are as of January 1st, 2019. They have essentially matched the leaves of absence to meet those under the EI Act. And so those are the extension to the pregnancy and the parental leave, the critically ill child care leave, and then the new leave of the critically ill adult leave. And time periods are all set out there on the slide. There also have been some changes. They have also initiated a domestic violence leave, which is up to 10 days, which can be taken intermittently or in one continuous period, and 16 consecutive weeks. Please note that the first 3 days of this leave is a paid leave. So the first 3 days taken in a calendar year is paid, and it may be used by the employee on behalf of themselves or their child to seek medical attention or obtain any victim services, et cetera. In order to qualify for that leave, there is a 3-month eligibility requirement.
PE made some last minute changes towards the end of last year with regards to their Employment Standards Act. These amendments became law on December 29th. And again, these amended leaves primarily match the changes made to EI in 2017 with respect to parental leave, compassionate care leave. And then just by way of note, their sick leave was also amended to reduce the qualifying period from 6 months to 3 months. There are some pending amendments in PEI. The law has passed, but the effective date is still pending. specifically as it relates to domestic violence leave. Again, the leave in PEI is up to 10 days. The first 3 days may be paid, and employees must be employed for 3 months to be eligible.
And Newfoundland is going to wrap up our view of the Canadian provinces here, and they've made all of our jobs a lot easier in the sense that they too have increased their leaves to match up with the EI changes from 2017. These amendments are now law. That's the extension to parental leave, the critically ill child care leave, and the creation of the critically ill adult leave, which is a new leave of 16 weeks of unpaid time. There must be 3 months of service in order to qualify for those leaves. The additional amendments in Newfoundland became effective as of July 1st, 2019, and that is the establishment of the family violence leave, which is a leave of up to 10 days per calendar year, taken intermittently or in one continuous period. The first 3 days of that leave in the calendar year are to be paid. And just like I referenced, I believe in Nova Scotia, the reasons that you can take that leave. In this case, there is a 30-day eligibility requirement, not a 3-month eligibility requirement. So what's next? If you haven't had your handbook recently reviewed, you absolutely should. These changes should be kind of set out in the handbook where applicable. I didn't mention off the top, but as you can appreciate, if you're not in compliance with employment standards legislation, it can result in liability to your company in the terms of fines and compliance orders, or worse yet, a workplace audit by the Ministry of Labor, where they can find a whole bunch of other violations. So we want to make sure that we are doing what all we can to be in compliance. Also, this is a good opportunity for you to review your practices to ensure that your practices are in line with these changes. If you have any specific questions about today's presentation, and we apologize for the late start on our end, we do appreciate you kind of waiting us out a bit. We did kind of speed through this information. It is a lot of information, but it is important information. So if you have any particular questions on how it relates to your workplace, please don't hesitate to reach out to our client care team. Next month, March 27th, put it down your calendars. We're going to be talking about progressive discipline, hopefully not as dry as today's topic, but just as equally important. So thanks again, guys, and we'll talk to you soon.